Cause they'll come in by it just to stay in the click. So don't delay, act now, supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to follow the maid. Be out tomorrow, but if the office shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. Tears because our baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choked up and focused on the close up, missed our wheels, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get bushwhacked. News that's in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relay.
So don't delay. Now supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the maid, be out tomorrow. But if the office shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
You're listening to Free Radio of Santa Cruz. That was Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun. I'm Craig Canada and your host. This is the show, Canada on Cannabis, that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And I should be having Mark Heinrich calling in shortly from Australia. He's had Dr. Bob Melamed visiting with him for the past several days. Bob Melamed of Cannabis Science. Bob Melamed and Richard Cowan have this company, and he's acquainted with one of the people. They announced a cure for cancer. Of course, it's not the first time this has been done. I think the first time that the cure for cancer was announced was back in 1974 or thereabouts. Cannabis Science announced a cure for cancer a couple of weeks ago. So I'm hoping he'll be talking about this. Mark is acquainted with a person who had used a topical preparation, I don't think it was the buds. I think it was the CBDs, the hemp, a topical preparation. They claim that it cured basal cell carcinoma, skin cancer, on the person's face. And so we should have Mark calling in. I'll give out some call-in lines later if you want to call in. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz, California. And 101.1 FM. And if you want to listen to streaming on the web, it's www.freakradio.org. That's FREAKRADIO.ORG. We have call-in lines, but I want to keep them clear until my guest calls in, so I'll give those numbers out later. And as I said, this is Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity, and I'm Craig Canada, your host. I have a website. It's www.palmspringsbum.org. And I have the archives for this show off that website. If you go there and click on broadcast or enter www.palmspringsbum.org/blog, that's my website, by the way, www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And if you follow that with Canada-on-cannabis, that's C-A-N-A-D-A, like the country, -on-C-A-N-N-A-B-I-S, it'll take you to my show page with the archives. I generally manage to get the archives up, sometimes it's as much as a week after the show. I like to listen to them and make sure that they're not flawed in some extraordinary way before I put them on the air. I'm still kind of new at broadcasting, so these things can happen. I'm just typing something into the computer here. I think what I'll do while I'm waiting for my guest to call is read you some of these articles about cannabis science. Also, they're having their festival, I believe they call it Mardi Gras, in Nimbin. I'm not sure exactly what they're having there, but they're having a big festival of some sort. And so I hope that we'll be getting some reports about that. Here's the here's an article, it looks like, from their website talking about cannabis science. This was published on February the 22nd, 2011. I've mentioned this before. And the title of this is the website here, Cannabis Science. It's one word, www.cannabisscience.com, one word. And they have a page for their news articles. And this was published, it was a press release published February the 22nd. And that sound you hear is the boom or the spring that the microphone is on. I'm trying to move it around so I can see better to read. And this is from Denver. And it says, the title is Cannabis Science Extracts Kill Cancer Cells in Cancer Patients Being Treated Through Its Licensed Distributor, Rockbrook. Cannabis Science Inc. and its OTCBB CBIS, CBIS is their ticker symbol, a pioneering U.S. biotech company developing pharmaceutical cannabis, in parenthetically marijuana derivative products, is pleased to announce that numerous patients are reporting that cannabis science extracts are killing cancer cells. Cannabis Science, in conjunction with Rockbrook, its Colorado licensed dispensary, consulted with a variety of cancer patients who are seeking to inform themselves of the current peer-reviewed scientific literature regarding the historical use of cannabis to treat tumors. Unlike most conventional cancer treatments, cannabis has an outstanding safety profile, and patients in states with medical marijuana laws are able to make an informed decision to legally try various cannabis preparations to determine what is most effective for their particular condition. Some of these scientifically informed patients have chosen to self-administer cannabis science extracts supplied by Rockbrook to treat their own cancers. Cannabis Science is delighted that patients are reporting dramatic improvements in their condition, including basal cell carcinoma. It's probably basal cell carcinoma. Non-small cell lung cancer accompanied by COPD, that's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, ovarian cancer, and glioma. Please visit www.cannabisscience.com to view the breaking news of the successful results and images of the self-administered cancer treatments. For example, a patient with basal cell carcinoma used a topical formulation to dramatically and rapidly eliminate her obvious skin cancer. Meanwhile, patients with internal tumors used oral formulations for their treatment. Just read that again, because you've got two different kinds of treatment mentioned here. Okay, for example, a patient with basal cell carcinoma used a topical formulation to dramatically and rapidly eliminate her obvious skin cancer. Meanwhile, patients with internal tumors used oral formulations for their treatment. We currently await more complete clinical evaluations of the patient's own reports of dramatic health improvements coincident with tumor shrinkage and disappearance. Dr. Robert J. Melamed, the CEO and president of Cannabis Science, Inc., stated, "We will pursue and acquire intrastate-generated data to make these cancer medicines available to the public at large as rapidly as possible. To accomplish this goal, we will seek accelerated FDA approval. We are on the verge of a revolution in medicine. Cannabis is now returning to modern medicine for all the right reasons. State-generated results give us a unique ability to acquire scientific and clinical data for cannabis-based cancer treatments. As previously announced, we will use our new laboratory facility to house analytical instrumentation, tissue culture, clean rooms, and additional necessary equipment. This facility will meet or exceed all federal, state, and local requirements to allow for the necessary FDA clinical trials." Cannabis Science expects to hold a press conference soon to formally announce its cancer formulation progress and further plans for cancer treatments. Brand names for our new cancer treatment drugs are currently being vetted through the company attorney for further commercial use. Then the rest of it is about Cannabis Science and about forward-looking statements. The forward-looking statements is generally a standard legalese that's at the end of all press releases of publicly held companies. I'll just read you the blurb about Cannabis Science. Cannabis Science, Inc. is at the forefront of pharmaceutical-grade medical marijuana research and development. The company works with world authorities on the phytocannabinoid science targeting critical illnesses and adheres to scientific methodologies to develop, produce, and commercialize phytocannabinoid-based pharmaceutical products. In sum, we are dedicated to the creation of cannabis-based medicines, both with and without psychoactive properties, to treat disease and the symptoms of disease, as well as for general health maintenance. So that's a little bit about some of what we'll be talking about tonight. After they made this announcement, and this was on February the 22nd, they also then came out with another announcement. Providing what they called physician's documentation. And this was on April the 6th, I believe. And essentially what they did is they put a letter, a redacted, heavily redacted letter, a PDF of this heavily redacted letter, on their website by a doctor stating that the person did have basal cell carcinoma. Looking for, this is on their website. If you go through their news articles, I'm looking for that right now. Here's their press release dated April the 6th about this. It's titled, "Cannabis Science Provides Physicians Documentation." That confirms successful treatment of skin cancer. Cannabis Science, Inc., a U.S. biotech company developing pharmaceutical cannabis products, on March 9, 2011, Cannabis Science announced that we would follow up our press release with medical documentation regarding the effectiveness of our cannabis extracts for treating skin cancer, as was documented photographically in our earlier press release of February 22nd, 2011. By the way, that press release has a PDF, was accompanied by a PDF file of a number of photographs of what I assume, I wouldn't, quite frankly, wouldn't know the difference of what I assume was cancer on someone's face, on their cheek and nose, which is there at the beginning and not there at the end. So, they say, we are pleased to announce that we have physician's documentation that confirms the successful treatment of basal cell carcinoma that resulted from the application of a topical cannabis extract. Please visit www.cannabisscience.com to view the breaking news of the successful results and images of the self-administered cancer treatments, along with the physician's documentation after 4 p.m. Eastern time today. And I think that was on a Friday they did that. Currently, there is a tremendous amount of controversy with respect to the effects that cannabinoids have on cancers. Endocannabinoids, phytocannabinoids, and synthetic cannabinoids have demonstrated cancer-killing and anti-metastatic properties in tissue culture and in animal models. While formal proper FDA-approved clinical trials that would prove or disprove the therapeutic potential of cannabis extracts for treating cancers, trials have not been carried out. I had to read that sentence again. It's not a complete sentence. It's written exactly as I read it to you. It's not this joint I'm smoking. The sentence says, while formal, proper, FDA-approved clinical trials that would prove or disprove the therapeutic potential of cannabis extracts for treating cancers, trials have not been carried out. Well, I think we know what that's supposed to mean. Nevertheless, a significant number of anecdotal observations have accumulated that suggest people suffering from a variety of cancers appear to have been cured by ingesting what is known as Rick Six Simpson's hemp oil. If you haven't heard of Rick Simpson's hemp oil or Rick Simpson or what this is all about, Rick Simpson was a guy up in Canada who claimed he could cure cancer. And this is not from marijuana. This is from hemp. Which has a much lower percentage of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, than marijuana or what's generally considered medical marijuana buds. So the ratio of the CBD to the THC is higher in hemp, and he boils this in naphtha, which I find extremely offensive. The idea of a solvent. But anyway, he boils it in naphtha, which extracts the cannabinoids, leaving an oil. Cannabis oil is a very thin, very fine oil, extremely fine oil. It also tastes rather sweet, and it doesn't have any sugar in it. And on the on YouTube, on the internet, you can find out more about Rick Simpson. He has a video called Run From the Cure about attempting to spread the word that he has a cure for cancer and help people in Canada. He ended up getting run out of the country. Hello, is that Mark? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? 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 Okay, we'll try that again. We'll try that again. Mark, if that was you, please try to call in again. And just typing in a message here on YouTube, not YouTube, Facebook. I think that may have been my guest that just tried to call, and hopefully they will try to call again. I'll continue while we wait for them to call again. Actually, just bear with me. What did that woman say? Talk among yourselves for a minute while I send him a message and tell him to try to call back again. I suppose if I was a professional, I would put some music on at this point and gracefully segue into the music and then come back and have everything all fine. I think that is my caller now. Hello, Mark. Is that Mark?
Yeah, hi, mate. How you doing?
Not bad at all. Was that you that just called in?
No, this is the first time I've called in.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good to hear from you. I was just reading an article about cannabis science and their cure for cancer. This is Mark Heinrich calling in. Are you in Canberra, Australia?
Yes, I am, mate.
That's a long way away from Santa Cruz. It's good to hear your voice.
You too, my friend. It's nice to see the world hooking up like this.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I'll be having people calling in from all over the world. I'm hoping in the future that I can have like roundtables with 4, 5, or 6 different people debating things. But at the moment, we only have 2 lines here. I tried to get Skype working, and it killed my archive. So until I can figure out how to get Skype working, we've got 2 lines here. You know, when I was thinking about what to talk about, one of the things I wanted to start with, there's so many things to talk about, is the history of medical cannabis in Australia. I know in the United States, the medical use, it became prominent about 1840 with the publication of O'Shaughnessy's paper. I think it was on the, I forgot the name of it right now, it's embarrassing.
Document, yep.
On the preparation of cannabis indica or something like that was the name of it. And so then from about the 1840s until, 1940, after the Medical Marijuana Tax Act of the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 is a widely used pharmaceutical, and people were using it for corn plasters and just a whole array of things. And it was. Can you give us a rundown of the medical of the history of medical marijuana in Australia?
Look, we're a little bit behind America and Canada and Europe, perhaps in taking up this. The medical use of cannabis, although it has been used here medically for quite some time, probably going back to the 70s and perhaps even before that. Myself, for example, it wasn't until I sort of hooked up with the internet that I started to access American and the Canadian sites and fully understand that there had been some extensive science there to back up what I had known were anecdotal treatments used by the hippie community here in Australia.
The what community is that? The Aboriginal?
No, the hippies. The
hippie
Aboriginals
community.
Have used cannabis for some time here, and in fact, it's nice timing that you actually bring up that topic, because when Dr. Melamed was here in Australia, particularly last year was his first visit, I introduced him to an Australian Aboriginal medicine man. Who in our culture we refer to as the clever man. And this chap, his name's Tony Bauer, he's been producing medical-grade tinctures for some years, which he's producing from indigenous plants, which is quite interesting. He collected the original genetics that were growing wild in the bush in South Australia and had taken them to his home around the Nimbin area of New South Wales. And so he's been, prescribing medical cannabis in the form of tinctures and now the oil for some time. But when Bob met him, it was very much a meeting of very different cultures, with Tony being Aboriginal and Bob coming from an academic background. And it was fascinating. the information that's come through from, say, Canada, for example, about cannabis curing cancer, Tony's been doing that for some time, and I first heard a report that I informed Bob about with this Rastafarian living in Nimbin who had been applying a topical application of the cannabis extract in a coconut oil solution, and they had been treating various forms of the skin cancers that we have such a high number of here in Australia, and been getting very, very good success. And last year, I also introduced Bob to another Australian lady who had come up from Melbourne to Nimbin, who had no prior experience in the cannabis scene, or particularly the medical cannabis scene. But conventional medicine had failed her, and she had a basal cell carcinoma on her nose and on her cheek. And I guess she had come to the hippie community to find out during Mardi Gras whether our medicine, that we know as medical cannabis, would be helpful to her in dealing with this cancer. Failing that, they were going to have to cut half her face off, basically, to get rid of it. So she didn't have much of a choice. So it transpired through the year that Bob Mellamy arranged for this patient to travel to Colorado and legally went through a treatment program with this cannabis extract directly to her basal cell carcinoma. And my understanding of it is that over a period of 10 days that the skin cancer flared up and looked really rugged looking, and then over a few days after that it died away to absolutely nothing, and what you were left with was fresh clean skin.
Well, can I interrupt you just a minute?
Okay. Sure.
So she started using this topical application, which is hemp, not bud, right? It's with the low THC with a higher CBD ratio. Is that correct?
My understanding of it was that it was a high THC extract.
It was a high THC, so it was made from bud or something
again,
like that.
I don't know how the medicine was actually produced or from what plants it came from, so I really don't know on that. But what I do know is that I saw this cancer on this patient's face myself last year.
Well, now what I wanted to ask you here was, okay, mm-hmm. So you said that she started using it for 10 days and it kind of scabbed up or got worse and then it went away. Is that what you said?
Yep. It flared up and looked red and angry, the actual cancer,
mm-hmm.
and then it faded away to nothing, and then what you were left with was clean, fresh, new, pink skin.
And so she had tried everything else, is that correct?
That's correct, and in fact, I had seen some correspondence from her plastic surgeon that had outlined the expected form of treatment, which would be through this surgery. And when the patient came back from Colorado, she went again to see her specialist, and I got an email from her. It was I'll never forget, it's quite excited. She said that her surgeon was baffled, delighted to tell her that she no longer had skin cancer and that there would be no need for surgery.
That's wonderful news. You know, this is there's a personal angle for this for me here, because my grandfather died of carcinoma of the face.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something I might have to worry about more than other people in the future. And another thing I'm thinking of, I've had my own personal experience with this. Someone gave me some tincture. And I had I believe they were this multi-polyresistant staph infections on my skin, which I had been attempting to get rid of for years. I mean, literally 5 years.
Yep.
Taken multiple rounds, every kind of antibody you could name, and they would go away and they would come back. And so this last time when they flared up, I put the tincture on them, and they cleared up. And
cool.
It took about 3 or 4 days for them to clear up. And so far, now they haven't come back. I actually waited to try that much longer than I should have. I had the tincture, but I kept thinking it won't work on this. This is polyresistant staphylococcus, or whatever they call that stuff, the really nasty stuff.
The MRSA is, I think, multi-resistant staphylococcal infection.
Yeah, which I'm diabetic, and so I have a concern with infections also.
Can I tell you of a wonderful new healing remedy that combines cannabis with honey that the community here in Australia is using? It might help a few people over there. For those injuries like ulcers that aren't healing or that are infected and are not responsive to any conventional antibiotic or antiseptic, what they've been doing is combining a product called MediHoney, which is this active honey that comes to us in Australia in a non-edible form, and we mix the cannabis extract with this MediHoney and apply it directly to the ulcers. So you get the antibiotic and a bacterial effect of both the honey and the extract, and the honey acts to debride the injuries and also to promote healing, and in conjunction with the cannabis is a profound healing tool. So if you get a chance to check out MediHoney, as I said, it's a non-edible form of active honey that only comes from New Zealand, which is able to treat those very resistant infections, like you said, the MRSA, and it's quite profound. So, but cannabis is the go here. We're excited about developments. Bob's been here. He sort of infected us with hope.
Oh, that's a good disease to have. I'm running low myself on that.
Well, you need to come to Australia, my friend. We'll infect you deeply.
There's a couple of things. Since you brought it up, I was going to I was going to talk about other things first. But since you brought up the your friend with the basal cell carcinoma,
yep.
I noticed that Cannabis Science made some announcements about it, and they said they had physician's documentation. And what they put on the internet was a single letter. I should try to pull it up before I talk about it, but it was just a PDF of a very heavily redacted letter, which appeared to be confirmation of the diagnosis that she did have basal cell carcinoma. Do you want to discuss that? Because it seemed to me that it wasn't very forthcoming and a bit dodgy.
Look, I know the patient involved. In fact, she's a close friend of mine, and in fact stayed at my house last week for a few days. Look, all I know is that she had had a history of cancers, skin cancers in the medical report.
We understand. I'm not saying that she appeared dodgy. I'm saying that what they offered as proof did.
Look, I'm not a businessman myself, and I'm not within the inner structure of the company itself. If there was a press release that came out that perhaps was misunderstood, I had the patient sitting at my breakfast table, and I'm looking at the proof. So in my mind, if things are put onto the internet, in a way which is perhaps casual. I don't know how the company operates like that. But I know that the claim that cannabis cures cancer, in this case with a basal cell carcinoma, is accurate. And I've seen the letter of confirmation that the final biopsy has shown that there is no sign of the cancer whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I know you were mentioning the preparation was in coconut oil. I think that's the first I've...
That's the one that was used in Australia. The extract that was given to her for her BCC was a pure extract applied topically.
Okay. I when you say a pure extract, I'm wondering, well, and how did they get that? Do you know? Did they use the Rick Simpson method, or do you know...
And again, I don't know specifics, and I can only assume that it was perhaps done in conjunction with Phoenix Tears. I know that Bob works very, very closely with them, and that they are a wonderful, honourable organisation, and probably the organisation through Rick that started off this search here in Australia to apply cannabis to cancer.
So what's the legal status of medical marijuana and marijuana, and what's the reality in Australia? I have been so focused on California and the United States, it's all I can do to keep up, and I can't keep up with what's going on locally. Why don't you tell us about that?
Australia, the best way to describe Australia and New Zealand is that we're living in a state of reefer madness. We have a very, very aggressive anti-drug campaign which is put out by the federal government and by the state government. We have aggressive policing of drug policy, and this is despite the fact that they've decriminalized some categories of drugs. And cannabis, for example, some states have decriminalized small amounts of it, but federally it is still fully illegal. So the medical cannabis issue is one that the government is going to have to confront over the next few years.
I know every now and then I will read an article or see some comment about what's going on in Australia. But so is there an underground medical kind of movement in there now?
Very much so. The Aboriginal medicine man that I mentioned earlier, Tony Bower, he's currently starting trials using his tincture and also a hemp oil for cancer treatment through the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is like the equivalent of your FDA. Now, Tony has the approval from the FDA to go ahead with the clinical trials, but he's still waiting on approval from the respective state government to allow that to actually go ahead.
Do you think that's likely to happen?
I think it is likely to happen. Tony's case is quite extraordinary because he's an Indigenous Australian and an Indigenous medicine man, and he's using an Indigenous plant to produce the medicine. Technically, in my view, that becomes a legal source of medicine. Tony doesn't recognise a lot of the white man's laws that have been imposed on him and his cultural group, the Aboriginal community. And Tony sees that his culture demands that he pass this knowledge on and that he be a healer. You know, he can't refuse a request to help somebody in his culture and in his role as a medicine man. So it's an interesting situation because I don't believe the federal government really wants to sort of step in and stomp on what's happening with that. Because that, on the one hand, they recognise the wonderful healing benefits of cannabis, particularly they're able to access this wealth of peer-reviewed scientific articles that have come out since the endocannabinoid system was discovered, and we're starting to get pro studies of cannabis instead of negative studies of cannabis. So the science is there to convince the governments, and I think the dilemma for us in Australia comes from the federal government through their National Cannabis Prevention and Information Centre, which is very aggressive in the way that they go out with their campaigns aimed at the young, you know, hailing cannabis as a dangerous drug. But look, I've always maintained that not all drugs suit all people. Cannabis suits some, so it doesn't suit others, but I don't think that there's any really need to demonise it. There are better ways to control and educate, and that's the push that the people in Nimbin and the other underground communities are starting to lean to in Australia. We're learning a lot from the American situation, and we're learning a lot from the Canadian situation. So,
what do you think you've learned? I want to. That sounds like a good question to me. I'd like to know. But what I was thinking, and I was thinking that on the way over here, when you're talking about this government agency, which essentially sounds to me like a propaganda agency.
They're a bunch of Nazis.
Their whole purpose being to violate the United States First Amendment. I don't know if you have a First Amendment in Australia. But I think of it this way. You know, you've got these pharmaceuticals. Nobody that I know of has ever claimed that cannabis caused them to shoot up a schoolyard. This Fox reporter Douglas Kennedy, a number of years ago, noted that was able to document at least a dozen. Every school shooting has been somebody on a pharmaceutical, a psychiatric pharmaceutical, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And I just I took those myself for situational depression, and good God, I don't want to. It was the most horrible. It truly made me totally nuts, and I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about it now. But I can understand how that people would shoot up a schoolyard. I guess if I'm going to say something like that, then I have to explain how I could understand it and what these drugs do. There's a video out by Gwen Olson, and she talks about how that they will split up the symptoms if they see that our side effects. If they see that one side effect is a problem and it's going to give them bad publicity, they will break it up into two or three other side effects. And so they've done that with these SSRIs. And what they do, one of the side effects is sleepwalking. One of the side effects is homicidal, suicidal ideation. And one of the side effects experienced by about 5% of the people that take them is manic psychosis. Now, marijuana doesn't do any of this to people. In fact, what these people are doing is they're blaming or claiming that marijuana causes the exact things that the pharmaceuticals drugs do. And I get depressed when this is staring me in the face constantly. But what I'm getting at is if you take sleepwalking means that what you're doing is, sleepwalking is that you're thinking about doing something. You're thinking, you believe that you're thinking about doing something, but you're actually doing it.
Yep.
Now, you combine that with homicidal, suicidal ideation, and hallucinations, and manic psychosis, and you've got people fantasizing about doing things, are believing they are, and actually doing them. And so I can understand how people would do these things if you've ever had a momentary flash of anger for some reason or another and thought about something you'd like to, not something you'd really ever do in reality.
Mm-hmm.
But
I relate to that very much. As a recovered addict, I've had times in my past where I've had a transient psychotic episode brought about by stimulants. I've also had periods of, you talk about this manic amnesic situation, with high doses of benzodiazepines, which is Valium, Serapax, Rohypnol, that category of drugs. At high doses, for prolonged use, you get a paradox. It's called the paradox of long-term use, where the stimulants are starting to, instead of sedating you and putting you to sleep, they're keeping you awake and they're making you manic. But the dangerous thing is that you have no recollection, as you have this immediacy of amnesia brought about by that benzodiazepine. I just wonder how many people are in jail for having done things like shit up schools, who've been on these high-dose benzos, and sure, they had a bit of pot in them as well. But just as you've indicated, there are other factors in these people's minds, whether they would have done it when cannabis was around or not, who knows? You know, that, to me, is madness. And you can't blame a specific drug.
Well, you know, I have a video, and I don't remember the name of the doctor, but he makes the point that these things did not happen before these pharmaceuticals were being marketed. And going postal entered the vernacular the same time that Prozac entered the pharmacopoeia. And I think that's, you know, it used to be that a serial killer or something like that was a extremely rare a thing. And then going postal, postal workers were shooting up McDonald's. People have forgotten that, but it was a huge phenomenon. It was happening all over the place. I'm trying to remember what year that was. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Did you?
Well, I went through the Prozac years. I just looked back and saw how my behavior was. When I was on Prozac, it was a nasty drug. I didn't like it. We have an expression here, like a mally bull on heat. I'd walk around quite literally with a constant erection and a fucked up head. You know, this is one molecule of ecstasy, and that one molecule was enough to turn it from a good drug into a bad drug. Now I use cannabis for everything. I'm part of this tincture trial that this Aboriginal healing man is doing. I have my tinctures during the day to deal with allodynia, which is idiopathic neuropathic pain.
Hmm.
But primarily I use the hemp to deal with my PTSD, which is the post-traumatic stress disorder, and it allows me to sleep through the night without having a recollection of having dreamed. And with PTSD for me, like I was locked up in a Turkish prison back in the 1970s, and it messed my head up pretty bad, and I've had PTSD for 35 years. So I use cannabis primarily so I don't dream. Well, I don't have a recollection of dreaming, as Bob Melamed explained to me. The dreaming still occurs, but the implanting of that memory doesn't happen. So I wake feeling refreshed as if I hadn't dreamed.
Well, you know, that's what everyone tells me that suffers PTSD, and while we're talking about this, you know, it takes about 3 days of sleep deprivation for people to begin hallucinating. And if you're taking an antidepressant that has a side effect of sleepwalking, and you're having a flashback, a post-traumatic stress disorder. Flashback, while you've been up for like a week because you can't sleep, and you're taking a drug. I mean, just the very, it makes me cringe just to intellectually understand what's going on here and what they're doing to people. And these people are calling cannabis dangerous. It's one of the things I harp on all the time is that these drugs that they're prescribing, which, by the way, nobody pays tax on, not in this country. I don't know about Australia. There's no sales tax on it, that's for sure. These drugs that they're prescribing are synthetic molecules that the human body has never encountered in all of evolution, and yet they are so concerned about the dangers of cannabis, which has been evolving with us, for thousands of years.
And I think that you just hit the nail on the head. Civilization would have realized whether it was a good drug or not in the last 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 years. Society globally has decided that as a civilization we will carry this drug, this plant, through with us because it's beneficial. Just as if they turned away from plants that are poisonous, you know, our global civilization needs cannabis to survive. That's why we have an endocannabinoid system.
Well, you know, that could be true in so many ways, not just the psychology of the supermind or the emotional health of the supermind, but also in some very pragmatic and practical ways. It's dealing with, well, radiation, using it as a preventative and an ameliorative for radiation sickness. It's good for cancer, gastrointestinal pain, for pollution. I just knocked my mind. Okay, I'm back. For fuel and for food and for fiber instead of plastics and instead of cutting down trees and just so many ways in the environment it replenishes the soil. I could go on and on and on. It's very frustrating for me to think about this. We have a call-in number here. The number is 831-469-3119. Mark, if you'll hold on, I'll talk to you as long as you want. What I'd like to do is, I can't decide whether to put on, I think I'll put on some music. I think I'll put on Silk Road by Kotaro Key, something very soothing.
Nice choice.
And give you a little rest, and I'll take a little rest, and we'll come back, and okay?
Cool, mate, cool.
Okay. It should be coming up soon here. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. This is Craig Canada, Canada on Cannabis. The address of the internet is www.freakradio.org. We have a call-in line. It's 831-469-3119. That's 831-469-3119. I'm talking with Mark Heinrich in Australia. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, mate, I'm here.
Before I took a little break there, we were talking about, what's the legal status now? I mean, well, you said it's illegal in Australia, so what are the penalties? Can you give us a quick rundown of that?
I'll give you an idea where I am in Canberra. Canberra's an area a bit like Washington, D.C., where it's administered federally, although we have our own legislative assembly which governs us. For two plants or less than 1 ounce, the police are allowed to use discretion. They can give you either a drug diversion notice or a simple cannabis offence notice, which carries a $100 fine. Now, that's considered as a misdemeanor rather than as a felony. And anything in excess of two plants, or if the plants are grown hydroponically, they call that enhanced growing, then the police would have the option, further option, to put you into court, to put you through the process there. And depending on what the judge rules, the penalties can be quite harsh. They're using the courts as a deterrent for people to grow cannabis. We have a problem like they have in North America with the Vietnamese crime games coming in and having grow-ups in the houses in the community. So the government and, I guess, the police are on this big drive to get people into the courts. But for the low-key people like for me, look, I'm in my 50s now, the police would have a good history of me through my contacts with them and know that I'm a medical user. And I believe that with the federal police, which are the ones who run Canberra, they have an educated understanding of the difference between criminal activity and medical use. Now, the federal police would also have, I guess, an oversight on what Tony Bower is doing, the Aboriginal medicine man in the next state. Now, although there's a state police to deal with that, I believe that neither of these two policing bodies are going to want this matter in court. It would be a losing situation in the High Court if we had an Aboriginal medicine man producing medicine from an indigenous plant. We would have the same result as just happened in Canada with Matt Murnar, where the government has basically said that the prohibition of medical cannabis is unconstitutional.
Can I get you to spell? Is it Tonybau?
Tony is his first name, and Bower is his second name, Bower. And he goes by the moniker Mulloway as well. So he's a breeder and a producer of medical cannabis in the form of tinctures and oil.
Mm-hmm.
And his medicine is quite profound. The tinctures that he makes are quite wonderful, and he's sort of gone off at a bit of a tangent from how it is in America and Canada, and that his primary philosophy is that the tincture, the fundamental core of a good tincture is the right strain. And Tony's been working with a strain called Clever Man, which is a multi-hybrid that is probably indica dominant. And he solely uses that to produce his tinctures. He's registering plant rights for that variety as well. Now, the tinctures themselves have been declassified because they brought Sativex into Australia. And Sativex is basically a tincture. So the change of laws to allow Sativex to come in for use here in Australia has also opened up the door for Tony's tinctures to come through.
They're
now classified as they're classified as a Schedule 9 drug.
I'm going to write that down. So Schedule 9 means what? Can you give us
pharmacy? It's a pharmacy issue drug.
Uh-huh.
Like with Sativex, you would have to go to a doctor, and then that would be prescribed and provided through a pharmacy. Well, Tony has a license from the TGA to be able to dispense the tinctures.
So
and the ironic thing is that the actual growing of the medicine, the government still considers illegal. So we're in interesting times here in Australia. I don't know if you saw in the last couple of days that New Zealand is looking to go ahead with trials for the medical use of cannabis.
No, I didn't I didn't see that. New Zealand made the news, I think it was about a year ago, and I'm trying to remember why. Did they not criminalize, but make it a misdemeanor? I guess that is decriminalized. Is that what they did?
Yeah, pretty much so, but in the last week there's been a big push through the Green Cross Society to formally set up through the government these trials for the medical use of cannabis. And I'll give you quite a funny example. When they had those terrible earthquakes in New Zealand that devastated Christchurch, there were thousands of people there who were homeless and terribly traumatized by it. So the lads up in Auckland in the cannabis community packed up a truck full of medical cannabis and drove down to give away 5-gram packs to treat them for PTSD.
Oh, I am so glad they did that. I would have loved to have done that. When I heard about the earthquake and the Japan earthquake, my first thought was, I wish I could go there and give everybody a joint. I'm sure that's what they want more than anything else right now.
They took it to the man and...
So how was it received? What happened? To tell us about this. That sounds wonderful.
Well, as you would all know, cannabis is the single best treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. And I guess when after the earthquake, you had these people who were traumatized. And PTSD is what I define as terror fatigue. So they did. They rolled up joints and put them into 5-gram packs with the Christchurch Earthquake Appeal, Buds for Relief, they were calling it, I think. And they drove this down from Auckland and got to Christchurch, and they were quite literally handing out medicine to people to help them deal with the immediacy of the trauma from the earthquake so that those memories wouldn't implant to cause them lifetime problems.
Well, you know, in addition to that, I've been in the San Francisco, was at 89 quake, I believe it was, when we had like a 7.1. I was downtown, in a 10-story building on the corner on the top. They do whiplash up there, so they swing more. But so the aftershocks, every time I was like about to fall asleep, we'd have another aftershock. So I'd be bolt up upright in bed, just, you know, wake, my heart pounding, you know, waiting for it, you know, like, is it going to continue? Should I get up and try to go to, or can I just lie in bed? And so, and there's just all sorts of reasons that I actually think that they should have little boxes on the power poles or the light poles that pop open and then stores that pop open in an earthquake and joints roll.
That'd be cool. And a little drop down in the airline as well with a joint in case you're going to crash one last puff before.
That's really a last resort there. You know, these pharmaceutical schedules you're talking about in Australia, so is it the higher the number is, the more restrictive they are, like one is nothing and nine is really, how high do they go? What's the...
I'm pretty sure what we would call a Schedule 1 drug here is no medical benefit.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure it is that level.
So in other words, then the one is so the higher the number gets, the less restricted it is? Is that how it works? And so nine is way down there.
Okay, well, I'll read it out to you. What we have here, the arrangements for supply of Category A patients, therapeutic goods that cannot be supplied, Schedule 9. Patients in this category have the right in consultation with their medical practitioner to use any therapeutic good except the medicines listed in Schedule 9, which is the standard for the uniform scheduling of drugs and poisons. Well, cannabis has been placed in that category where, although the patients are told that they have the right to treatment, they do not have the right to access cannabis.
I guess the only way that you could get around that up front in Australia would be to, $100 fine compared to some of the things I'm seeing in California, license fees for a grow of like $210,000 and $90,000 to license a dispensary and...
Yep.
And 20% tax, you know, you're talking on several ounces a month at $250 an ounce, or that's if you get a good price. If you get a break, $100 ticket for a misdemeanor sounds to me cheaper than all of that. What do you think?
I think it's a good method to keep kids out of court so that they don't get a felony. It allows the kids to go and have a puff, and maybe if they get caught, maybe once or twice, they can have their drug diversion and a $100 fine. But, see, in Australia, because we're an island stuck on the other side of the world, if you've got a messed up record with a felony offence, you can't go to a lot of countries. I can't get into the States, for example, even if I wanted to go to Canada because I have a felony.
I can't go into Canada, and that's my last name, and they won't let me in because I have two felonies for cannabis.
Yeah, they told me I have to get a rehabilitation visa.
Oh.
That's bizarre.
Well.
But, listen, while we're talking about Australia, too, something else that fascinating that happened at NIM, and I don't know if you know of this.
I wanted to ask you now.
Yep.
So I hear that Bob was there last week. I guess he's left. Was this for some event that they're having in Nimbin? I've heard of the Mardi Gras, but isn't that earlier in the year?
No, well, you've got Mardi Gras, which is the gay festival down in Sydney, and we are the Mardi Gras, which is held up in Nimbin, and it's the biggest cannabis and law reform festival in the Southern Hemisphere.
So is that going on right now?
No, mate, it's the first weekend in May every year, so Bob came down at his own expense, actually, which was quite extraordinary considering the cost of the fares. But he came to take part in Mardi Gras, and he was one of our featured guests to talk about medical cannabis. And we'd roped in a bunch of other doctors and academics to take part in these rallies that we had in the town hall at Nimbin, quite separate from the recreational celebration of it. It's very much a joint festival where we're really pushing the point about medical. And something that Ed Rosenthal said to me a few years ago, he said, Mark, you'll never get change if you are faceless and nameless in the shadows. And that really struck me because when I first started switching about medical cannabis, I was looking at the US and I was looking at Canada, and I could see people out on the streets. You know, not the hippies. Over in Canada and the States, you had the doctors, the dentists, the draftsmen, the lawyers, regular people out protesting for cannabis. And that was profound, that these people were putting their identity on the line to stand up for what they believed in. It's extraordinary. And we're just going through that phase now where we're coming out of the shadows and becoming people with faces, with voices, with opinions, and not hiding away on some obscure website that's, you know, for the cannabis devotees. I'm talking about stepping up. And we're learning a lot about America and Canada. And I think the biggest thing is to get Joe Citizen involved. We have to get people out of this stigma that because you use cannabis, you can't admit it because you'll draw shame from society. And in Australia, that stigma is a heavy weight.
Well, it's
so
something
American,
that...
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, it's something that frustrates me a great deal because what I'm seeing is the dispensaries, for instance... prohibiting patients from medicating there. Now, let me tell you about the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club.
Yep.
In 1996, there were several hundred people there on any given day on two floors smoking. And the media were there. We had every major media, I mean, you know, all the alphabet soup, all over the world, American, French, going through there, and these people came through with their cameras, and they could see what it was doing for people. The politicians could come in and see what it was doing for people. You know, this person has tremors. They have multiple sclerosis. They have spasms. Watch them stop. And they could bring, and we all knew, you know, they announced people. But you talk about visibility, and one of the first things the clubs, the people who claim to be compassionate are doing is saying you can't smoke there. They'll call the police if you smoke in the parking lot, and giving up, and also in public that, you know, just patients need to smoke in public. You're talking about visibility. And we have, you know, this one side who believes that if you have the right silver and the right crystal, you will be accepted and everything will be fine. And that's not the way it works. What happens is they end up stealing your silver.
Yep.
And I'm a real advocate of visibility. I have a site on the internet. I have for years because I think it's important to be visible. And I know that when I was looking for anything, I can remember when there was one article a week, you were lucky to have one article a week that had the words medical and marijuana in it.
Yep.
And there was one little site that a guy had in California. He was a patient. I think it was San Luis Obispo. He was moving around because the police were harassing him. And he had it up for several years, and that had a lot to do with why I've had my site up now for about 7 or 8 years. I've forgotten how long. 2003, 2004 it was, so that's 7 years I've had my site up. You know, and there was, I have a lot of criticisms of Mark Emery. But they did have some good videos in their site. I actually knew what I was looking for and specific names and people that I wanted to hear and find out what they were doing. So it was a while before I realized they also had a lot of stuff I really didn't like on their site. I won't name names, but no, let's just not go there. This, but they had a lot of stuff I didn't like. But it was very... you were talking about visibility. And so we've got these factions that are telling us, you know, you should never smoke in public because that's not what a medical patient does. And you know what? The other day I was in a restaurant, and I saw this guy whip out a hypodermic and stick it in his thigh. And I almost got up and went over there and thanked him for doing that, because I've had so many people say, you never see a diabetic do that. I was sitting there thinking, you know, you don't shoot up smack or any of the stuff before you eat. That's just not something you do, you know?
Yep.
I mean, how do you explain someone that doesn't understand what I just said, what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think the way you explain it is that those people are endocannabinoid deficient.
Well. You were talking about these trials that Tony Bauer is doing.
Mulloway's Medical Cannabis is his company name.
What's the name of that?
Mulloway.
Oh, Mulloway.
Yep, Mulloway's Medical Cannabis. So Mulloway's his conventional nickname in Nimbin.
You know, it just occurred to me, if anyone in Australia... wants to use or become informed of is interested in medical cannabis, can you recommend some organizations or should that not be something you'd want on the internet and on the airwaves?
How do you mean, organizations that provide the medicine or...
Well, that can connect them with people who enable them to... use marijuana for medical reasons.
Well, look, Tony, for example, Mulloway is highly accessible.
He is. Okay.
Anybody that wants to make contact with him, if you just Google up Tony Bauer and Northern Star, which is the newspaper that carried his press release, he's put out numerous press releases challenging the government and telling them what he's doing. But he's also put out his contact details now.
Is Northern Star a church? I seem to remember a marijuana church called Northern Star.
This is just the newspaper that is in the area. And keep in mind that our newspapers in Australia are controlled by Murdoch and Packer, which is another reason why there's very minimal pro-cannabis coverage in this country.
Well, I have been watching, for instance, the major newspapers compare. It frustrates me. We were talking about pharmaceuticals earlier. It frustrates me no end that it seems that our organizations here want to compare cannabis to alcohol. I think that's like snatching defeat from the jaws of the victory. I think that the real message, what gives us the moral high ground, is the fact that these pharmaceuticals, which the government pays for if you're poor, they subsidize these companies, they don't pay sales tax, and these pharmaceuticals are dangerous. They kill people, and cannabis doesn't. Comparing it to alcohol, you know, I don't understand. Maybe our organizations have made the article, but when you just look, in fact, and I thought about when we were talking earlier about playing the video I have of Gwen Olson, who is a pharmaceutical rep, and she talks about this, and I may do that in a few minutes. It's about 8 minutes, and it'll give you and me a break. It's coming up on 7:20. It just seems to me that our organizations are pulling their punches. They're snatching defeat from the jaws of the victory when they do not address, compare it to pharmaceuticals. You know, and they're not doing this. They're trying. They're associating and comparing it to alcohol. And I think what I'll do is I'll put on this video, if it'll come up, by Gwen Olson, if I can find it. Oh, it's on another list. And you were talking about what you... I'd like to hear what you've learned from watching the U.S. and Canada. You know, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Canada is the flim-flam mine disaster.
Yeah, I heard about that. That was hilarious.
That's like, you know, it's so typical of what happens when government tries to do something. And the very idea of growing marijuana in a mine, first of all, is like, why? Why do you put something that was evolved to be in the sunshine as far under the ground as you can in air full of heavy metals? That just did not... I didn't grok that. I mean, obviously, they were set up to fail. Let's see. What was I going to put on? Okay, yeah. Gwen Olson. Let me see if I can get... Here we go. Now, is that the one? And I may follow that up with a short one on antidepressants, school shooters, and suicide, or maybe not. But, okay, here should be coming up here, Gwen Olson. This is ex-pharmaceutical rep speaks out. And this is on YouTube. 8 minutes and 52 seconds.
I like to know things. I'm Gwen Olson. And I am a former member of the pharmaceutical industry, actually a 15-year veteran of pharmaceutical industry. And I worked as both a specialty rep in the industry and as a hospital rep for a period of time. I also was in the field calling on general practitioners and other doctors in the first part of my career. However, I had a change of consciousness while I was in the industry and determined that I needed to leave, and I also had a moral obligation to share with other people what I had experienced, what I had participated in, and what I had seen. And the impetus for all of that primarily was that I had an adverse reaction to antidepressants in 1992 when Zoloft first came out. I was in the midst of a divorce, and my primary care physician told me that because I was losing weight and was a little despondent, that I should try a new, wonderful SSRI antidepressant that had come onto the market. And SSRIs being the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They were fairly new at that time. And there wasn't that body of information out there that you can now find on the internet and just about anywhere you look about the serious adverse reactions that people have to antidepressant drugs. So long story short, I went home and took just a couple of days worth of the Zoloft and started to have horrendous reactions. I couldn't sit still. I had racing thoughts. I felt palpitations like I was going to have a heart attack, severe anxiety, severe agitation. There was an internal tremor that was so severe that at times I would actually get into a fetal position and hold myself in order to control the shaking. So I called my family practitioner and said, hey, I'm having an akathisia reaction to Zoloft. You know, I need to get off of this drug. And he says, well, it's not possible that you're having an akathisia reaction because that's not in the package insert. And I might back up and let you know that as a pharmaceutical rep, I had sold haloperidol, Haldol, a drug for schizophrenia, and was very familiar with an akathisia reaction because I had been trained about what these reactions were and how people, you know, responded to medication when they had an akathisia reaction. And so I was really just, you know, surprised that my physician wasn't aware that this could happen on an antidepressant drug. And even though he told me that we should double the dose, which I did comply and did initially for another couple of days, I eventually called him back and said, hey, listen, you've got to get me off of this drug. You know, I am having an akathisia reaction. I am just coming out of my skin. This drug isn't working for me. So rather than put me through a washout period, which would have been the appropriate thing to do, getting the toxicity of the chemical that I had in me completely out of my system, we immediately went into a Prozac regimen. And, of course, I'd only taken Prozac another day or two when I completely became manic psychotic. And I had no recollection, I'll be honest with you, I had severe memory loss around the period of time that this happened. And so if I hadn't been a chronic journaler, and I journal nearly every day, I wouldn't have been aware of what was happening to me. But I obviously started hallucinating and becoming delusional. And at that point in time, I called my physician back again, and they were trying to hospitalize me. But having been a pharmaceutical rep that spent my time in the corridors of mental institutions and in psychiatric boards, there was no way in HE double toothpicks anybody was getting my ass in a mental institution. So I fought and fought and fought not to go into a mental institution, because I knew from my own experience that once I got behind those closed doors, they could do anything they wanted to me. And once I got one of their major labels, then I was going to be a lifelong customer for the pharmaceutical industry, and I was well aware of that. So I went on my own alternative healing path after they had given me a total of 14 different antidepressants without a washout period, and I was a complete chemical basket case. So I wasn't able to function, I wasn't able to work, I was on disability long term for several months before I was even able to go back into the field and call on doctors again. And at that time, I was labeled as being bipolar and told that I had a defective brain chemistry and that I would need to be on these drugs for the rest of my life. And I knew that, in fact, that this was not what was happening to me. I knew that I was having serious adverse drug reactions, and that if I didn't stop taking the chemicals that they were forcing on me, that I was going to have permanent brain damage, which, in fact, I have. I have permanent memory loss several months of time around that period that I have absolutely no recollection of anything that happened. And I also have a kind of memory loss that occurs with stroke patients, in that if I'm very fatigued or if I'm extremely busy, sometimes I just can't even remember from one moment to the next. I can lose my train of thought in the middle of a sentence very easily. And I have never, ever, prior to having had these adverse reactions, had a problem with being articulate. I can talk anybody's leg off. So this was something that I just felt very adamantly about, and I started advising anyone that I knew who was on antidepressant drugs that, hey, there's something wrong with the antidepressant drugs. There's stuff about these things that they don't know about yet. You know, you may not want to be taking them. I had a very severe adverse reaction to them, but it wasn't anything that forced me to get out of the industry at that time. To be honest with you, the position was such a lucrative position that I was very hard-pressed to find anything else where I could make the kind of money that I was making and have the kind of benefits that I had. Because I had a company car, I had full insurance benefits for health and eye care and dental care and all of that, and an expense account that I could never spend all of my expense money any given expense period. So, you know, those were things that I missed quite a bit when I would try to go out and work in other areas. But I eventually knew that, you know, I was a part of the problem by even working part-time in the industry. And I left the industry in 2000 and went into natural health and healing, because that was how I had actually found my healing after my adverse reaction. And to be honest, I spend all of my time now educating people on the adverse effects of psychiatric drugs and other drugs as well, but also the initiative that Big Pharma has out there trying to label as many Americans as possible as being mentally ill, so that they can put us all on psychiatric drugs which have not been proven to be effective and are extremely dangerous and are strictly a social control mechanism. And that is what I do now for a living, is I've written a book called Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher. And that came out in August of 2005, and I'm getting ready to revamp and relaunch this year. And I have been touring all of the United States and Canada on a child advocacy campaign, screening the movie Prescription Suicide, and lecturing to chiropractic physicians and their staff members about the adverse effects of these drugs, so that they will be able to identify patients that they see these drugs in their charts that are having adverse events, and be able to counsel them as to what to do in order to control the adverse events or to discontinue the drugs if they choose to do so.
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. This is Canada on Cannabis. I'm Craig Canada, your host. This is the show that believes the prohibition of cannabis is a crime against humanity. You can listen to this streaming on the air at www.freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. I'll have archives of this show and others posted on my website. The web address for that is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. That's PALMSPRINGSBUM. And that's my blog, and up in the right-hand corner, there's a menu that says, what does it say, home, broadcast, bookshop, and contents. And so if you click broadcast, it'll take you to the show page with the archives. Also in the right side column is a fan page that I have links posted, and it's got a scroll box. It's basically what I post on my Palm Springs Bum Facebook page, what I'm reading, what I'm thinking about, videos, and the things I talk about on the show. And so a lot of the videos and so forth that and links to the that we're talking about, you can find there. We have a call-in number. It's 831-469-3119, talking to Mark Heinrich from Australia. You still there, Mark?
Yes, I am, mate.
It's good to hear. It's so good to talk to you. I know we've corresponded for a while. Several years now, it seems, and this is the first time we've talked, and I'm really enjoying it. You were talking about what you've learned. I was thinking, besides the U.S. and Canada, I believe Portugal and Spain and some other countries have taken significant steps. I read an article that Russia had decriminalized. I don't know if that's true or not. And they were planning on setting up shops in various cities in Russia. So you want to talk about that and where you see it going in Australia and where you want to see it go and what's happening?
Look, I saw that article in about Russia as well, and I can only keep my fingers crossed that it is true. It would be certainly a far more acceptable medicine for them to use and maybe to replace with alcohol. I think alcohol is a terrible problem in Russia, and cannabis is well proven to be helpful in alcohol withdrawal programs.
For so many reasons. Delirium tremens, I think it could prevent that. In fact, the drugs that we were talking about, the SSRIs, also are severely addictive and have severe withdrawal. One of their withdrawal symptoms is the zaps. It's basically electric shocks. I have experienced this, and it's like you're being electric shocks throughout your entire nerve system. It was throughout my entire body. It's a horrible situation. If you take the drugs and you start to wig out on them, you can't quit. You get an electric shock if you try to quit. I mean, can you? And people are talking about cannabis being dangerous. I don't think I'll ever stop ranting about that. But I want you to talk about Australia, and we've got about 30 minutes left. If somebody does call in, I just want to let you know that I don't have the ringer for the phone turned on because I'm afraid if I switch lines, I will disconnect my guest. However, there should be a light flashing, so just let it ring, and I should see it eventually. So go ahead, Mark.
Look, as far as Australia is concerned, what primarily came out of Nimbin and our law reform rally that Bob was a part of, and also probably Australia's leading criminologist, is that we need to bring cannabis out of the shadows. We need to start putting the science, this peer-reviewed science, in the faces of the politicians.
Can you just hold that thought for a minute? Because when I was thinking about cannabis science, one of the things I was thinking about is there anything about this topical application, for instance, that is proprietary that anyone couldn't do themselves if they wanted to? In other words, I guess the point that I'm getting at is that from what I know, there's nothing particularly proprietary, or there's no reason that anybody couldn't cook this up in their kitchen if they wanted to. But the thing is that cannabis science is publicizing that's these things. They sent a press release saying we've cured cancer. Here is what happened, and photographs, and you know that costs money. That's not cheap for them to send that stuff out.
Yep.
So you were talking about what came out of Nimbin And the idea of publicizing, and I just that was an idea I had while we were talking earlier. So get back to your turn, Mike.
Cool. All right. Look, we needed to bring everything out into the open. We needed to lobby political parties in all of the states, in the territories, and also the federal government. We need to start making them accountable for decisions that they're making that are depriving people of proper and appropriate health care. Part of that is going to be taking the federal government to task on one primary issue that probably impacts on all of us here in Australia, is that under our constitution we have no guarantee of health care. There is a major flaw that exists in Australian law, and it's further exacerbated by the fact that if you feel that your human rights have been impinged on under the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, which is a very basic document in which Australia is a signatory to, we have a problem in that because we don't have a guarantee to health care under our constitution. The Commissioner for Human Rights, which is a federal government-appointed position, will not take your case up if you've been deprived of cannabis as a medicine, because that aspect of human rights isn't in their charter. Now, that is just bizarre.
Well, you know, in the United States, it is the same way. The Angel Raich case, I believe the decision was that the Supreme Court concluded she did not have a right to life. The fact is that our Declaration of Independence has the phrase life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the 10th Amendment talks about all rights that are not, I'm trying to remember the exact wording of that, but essentially it says that any rights not specifically given to the federal government are retained by the people or the states. And so that when you can, it seems, well, in spite of that and in spite of the fact that the Declaration talks about life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, it seems that we don't have a right to those, at least with under the current court's interpretations. Do you know what countries do guarantee health, a right to health? Had you thought about the fact that, you know, that the United States, we don't have that right, and that was a shock to Angel Raich and everyone else, that we didn't have a right to life?
Well, I think Canada, through the recent Bernard decision, is showing that health care is a fundamental right.
I'm not familiar with that, and I'm on the verge of asking you how to spell it.
it started a few years ago, actually. I don't know if you're familiar with Marco Renda from Treating Yourself magazine, but Marco was in a court case.
I've admired him for some time. I've heard bad things about him, but he seems to me to be an upfront guy to me.
Mate, I can tell you as gospel, that man has helped Australia and our push for medical cannabis probably more than any other single individual from any other country in the world. He has spent thousands of dollars in helping us with our cause, and not once has he ever come to me and said, "Mark, now it's my turn, quid pro quo." Marco has, I mean, thousands of dollars. For nearly 3 years now, he's been sending his publications here to Australia at no cost to us, and a big cost to him for freight and the actual production of the magazine. And those magazines have been fundamental in educating Australians about medical cannabis. Absolutely fundamental.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that, because one of the reasons I'm doing this show is because I want to give a voice to people and ideas that I think are the people that are really doing the work of the movement, and yet they're the ones that are not getting recognition. You know, the media is always going to Alan St. Pierre. And don't get me started on him, but he really pissed me off when he gave 420 to Normal on last April 20th, 5 days after Jack Hare had died on tax day. I felt that was pissing on his grave. Well, I did get started, didn't I? Why don't you get back to your
Look, I think in our individual arenas in this drug war, we have various people that you know, can fall into the category of outrageous, but the good people are the ones that I like to recall and the ones that I like to be around. And, you know, my role on the Nimbin Mardi Gras Organising Committee is to get the best of the international speakers to Australia to help us with our cause. And I guess that's why Bob Millamede was one person that we brought in. We were trying to bring in Lisa Mamakin Kirkman, from Skunk Magazine, and also Alistair Murden from Toronto, who is a LEAP representative, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Oh, yeah, Alison's been out there for a long time fighting hard.
Yeah, they're terrific. And just before Mardi Gras, we three very courageous law enforcement officers formed up Australian chapter of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and they came to Mardi Gras and spoke out 10,000 young people that the laws on prohibition were ridiculous.
And let me stop you just for a minute. So you're saying that this was the first law enforcement against prohibition organization?
The first chapter of law enforcement in
Australia?
Australia was formed just before...
Three officers. That's news. That's
profound. And
that's like saying you're gay in the South.
Norm Stamper was here about a year and a half ago on a LEAP tour, and... when he was in Perth after his talk, he got collared by three detectives in the drug squad, and they literally give him a verbal bashing. It was almost a verbal assault under the law. And now saying, man, what the F are you doing? This is crazy. But one of the LEAP members that's just been formed lives here in Canberra, and he's a corrections officer at the local prison. And I tell you, I told him at dinner the other night, you got big balls to be doing what you're doing. You're standing up and you're putting it in the face of the man. And again, we go back to that lesson that we learned from North America. We have to stand up out of the shadows and be people with a face and a voice, not faceless identities on anonymous websites, you know. So I keep coming back to America and Canada and how we've been inspired. Goodness me, I get excited just talking about it. We're on the cusp of good things here. It's tough as hell, full-on reefer madness. And, you know, really is the front trenches of the drug war down here in Australia. But, you know, we know that we're righteous, and if we have the right people, we can win. You know, even if it's in a little small part of the world here in Australia, we will win.
Well, it's everywhere. I see it as the battle forevermore. It's the battle between the oppressed and the oppressor, between the predators and the people who just would like to live their lives and go about their business and be left alone.
Yep.
And it seems to me like it's the battle forevermore. It's about our very basic freedoms. It's about whether we own our bodies or not. And so when I think of it in those terms, I don't think there is anything that is more important. But I guess, you know, how do you get people involved? We have, I guess, made some progress here, though. It looks like this is in the United States. It's going to be going in a direction that will ultimately end up choking access to medical marijuana. I hope my worst fears don't come true. But it looks like it's going to be corporatized, and that the access is going to be denied to people unless they spend money for some patented gizmo in order to use it or something. When you look at the laws in Delaware and in New Jersey, the trend has been for more restrictive laws. You were telling me that. You were in Australia. The move is toward visibility, and I know you're talking about the law enforcement and 10,000 people. That is a tremendous thing. Do you have an organization I don't want to call it a marketing campaign. Perhaps a public relations campaign would be a better word. But you know these things. Are planned. You like send them. Do you have anything like that in the works? Do you have any? What's where's that going? What's happening with
it? What's the primary source of activism in Australia is quite centralised at the moment in Nimbin through the Nimbin Hemp Embassy, and the Nimbin Hemp Embassy hemp stands for Help End Marijuana Prohibition. So the embassy. Is the organisation that puts on the Mardi Gras Festival and the Law Reform Rally, but also through their organisation underneath their retail store is what we affectionately refer to as the Bunker, and that's the NERF Centre of Australian Activism, and they have a team of dedicated activists who are there on a daily basis, 365 days a year, sending out emails, liaising with the people that we need to as far as getting the message spread out about medical cannabis.
You know, one thing that I would like to see, when I was participating in the Gay Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which was very effective, this was 15 or 20 years ago. Good Lord, it's been a long time. But they had a very structured way. One of the things, you're talking about visibility and image, and one of the things I would like to see the marijuana anti-prohibition movement do, and one thing they would do if they were actually organized and really did have money. But what GLAAD had was a rather sophisticated structure to deal with defamations. They had a committee of people, these were all volunteers, a committee of people who scanned the media. They would have one person who would go through everything on ABC Video, another person go through everything on the New York Times. We had one person for each of the five major journals of record at the time. These are the major newspapers. They were, I can name them. The New York Times, the LA Times, no, I can't name them. The San Francisco Chronicle, I think the Boston Herald, no, the Boston Globe, and there's one more that I can't remember right now. Perhaps the Atlanta, no, the Washington Post. I did get all five of them. And so we had all of those covered, and they would look for anything that was considered a defamation. They would clip, they would send us the video or the article, and also magazines, the major magazines. They would clip and send it to, I was on the media committee is what they called it, a group of us who would sit down and read these and discuss them and decide whether they were an action item or not. And if I were in, if I were king, every time the L.A. Times said pot store or pot doctor, that would be an action item. That is a defamation. And because these are medical marijuana, and marijuana is medicine according to state law in California. So anyway, we had a committee of people who would monitor the media. We had a committee of people who would vet these submissions and decide which ones should be action items. Once something was voted on as an action item, well, first of all, you had to determine what you wanted from them before you could determine that voted as an action item. And so, you know, what you wanted from them as far as restitution or what you wanted them to do. For instance, just stop saying, say marijuana or cannabis and not pot, you know, something that simple. Yep. Just stop it. And so then there was a graduated progression of escalation. It was first you started with letters and emails, and if that didn't work, then they had a phone tree. And if that didn't work, there were various escalations, half a dozen or more, all the way up to having, you know, if nothing worked, then GLAAD would just call them and say, look, if you don't stop it, you're going to find ACT UP on your front door. And they were there. And it was very effective. I spoke a long time there without taking a deep breath.
We get excited when we talk about our passions, don't we? And isn't that wonderful that we do, that you do forget to take a breath? There's so much good that we are bringing to the world. You know, it's a powerful message, and it does generate excitement in people, and it's part of the reason why I like being an activist. I like this feeling, you know, this when you know you're on a righteous path. And after Mardi Gras, I had three words in my mind: cannabis kills cancer. That's just been my... whenever I see people, I tell them cannabis kills cancer. I don't go talking about treaties. I don't necessarily go talking about human rights. 1 in 10 Australians have skin cancer. Nearly everybody's got a relative that's dying of cancer of some form or another. And there's this plant that I know intimately that we're trying to bring to them to heal them. You know, and it's this...
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, skin cancer is a problem in Australia. I had no idea it was 1 in 10. I have no idea what the figures are in California or the United States, but that seems extraordinarily high. That's because of the radiation coming through because of the ozone depletion. Is that
very
right?
Very much so, and also because of the Australian culture. We used to have a beach culture. You know, the sun bronzed Aussie out there in his Speedos and his white T-shirt with a golden tan, you know. That's all changing now. The sun in Australia during our summertime is extreme. And, I think it's only been the last few years where they've had a very active campaign about skin cancer that Australians, particularly young ones, are starting to rethink. But, you know, vanity is vanity. You still get the young girls out there, God bless them, in their bikinis out at the beach getting a tan.
Oh, I grew up with that.
And while it might be harmful to them, you know, it's terrific to look at, but... Yeah, it's not healthy for them.
I don't know. I grew up with that, and I used to love to, like, I remember we used to oil up coconut oil and lay out in the sun to get turned. And then after we'd done that, then we'd go down to the beach on the Gulf Coast down at Pensacola where the sand is sparkling brilliant white, mm-hmm. and lie on that in the blazing brilliant sun. And actually, you know, if you didn't get sunburned, it was nice. Yeah. I enjoyed it. But... we've got about 10 minutes left, so I guess I want to give you a few minutes to wrap up, and then I want to put on some music and close up the show. I guess you were about to give me your last thoughts before I interrupted you, so why don't you do that? Any last thoughts here?
It's been a wonderful interview, actually. I'm all for this reaching out globally to each other and learning from each other. I think if we start working towards it as a community, this cancer and cannabis issue is too profound to just be limited within a corporate body.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, I've forgotten the exact percentage. 3% is coming to mind. I think that something like 3% of cannabis patients or cancer patients, actually, it could be 7%. I think it depends on who's counting and why they're counting. But of course, it's extremely important, but it's such a small percentage of the people that are helped, you know.
Yep. See, for us here in Australia, to tackle the issue about skin cancer initially as a single focus allows the government to deal with an issue which has minimal impact as far as potential for criminal diversion.
I don't guess there's any way. Well, you know, I was thinking of some sort of a study where that you could put it on your skin and see if it was, what's the word, prophylactic. In other words, you know, you could put it on like sunscreen.
I don't see why people can't make their own extract down the track. They need to work out this CBD issue. Everybody's pushing for high CBD strains at the moment. But my understanding of it is, and keep in mind, I'm not a scientist, is that... CBD turns down the CB1 receptor, and that's one that's pretty profound as far as treating cancers. So maybe if we get the breeders in there defining the right type of plant to be treating the illness or illnesses, some may need the CBD, some may need just the high THC to treat the cancer topically or internally, the way Rick Simpson does.
Rick Simpson is in Amsterdam now, no, in the Netherlands, is he?
Say again?
Is Rick Simpson still in the Netherlands in exile?
No, Rick's still in Europe. We'd hope to get him down to Australia for Mardi Gras, but sort of plans didn't go the way that we wanted. But because I wanted him to meet Neville Schoenmakers, who's resurfaced on the world stage, probably the world's most iconic breeder. You know, we weren't responsible for Neville's haze and White Widow and Super Silver Haze. Probably
I am so ignorant about that, strains and breeders. I am embarrassed. I am so focused on the politics and the legalities. Yeah. And
these are going to be the producers of our medicine. We can't trust the government to produce our medicine. And as you said, look what happened in Flintline when the government tried to do it in an abandoned nickel mine. We have to get our own breeders. And as I said to the government people that I spoke with a few weeks ago, if you're going to build a building, you get an engineer, or you get an architect, you get an expert. If you're going to deal with a cannabis medicine, you get an expert from our culture, our breeders. Mm-hmm. We have to use our knowledge, our anecdotal experience that goes back, years and years and years, and we have to convince them to let us do it our way because we've already been through all the mistakes. We know what our medicine is.
On the one hand, it's a weed, but on the other hand, if you want that weed to be good medicine, you have to know a lot. It's really not an easy plant to grow.
Exactly.
It is not.
And this is why we need...
Very interesting plant. Extremely interesting plant, but not easy to grow. Not that.
True.
Not as easy as they would tell you.
Yeah.
I had a question, but it just popped out of my mind. I think We got 5 minutes. I think, Mark, I'm going to let you go. I really, really do appreciate you calling. I really enjoyed talking to you. This is the first time I've talked to you, actually.
At any time. It's been a privilege to talk to you like this, and it's been a real privilege.
Well, yeah, I hope to have you on again in a few months, in the upcoming weeks. I remember what I wanted to ask you. Lynette Davies said she was brought down to Australia. Did you meet her? You know, she was in the one of the prominent opponents of Prop 19.
I don't think that she went to Mardi Gras. It wasn't, but she may have been, but wasn't aware.
That may have been Alice Springs. That's a whole different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, we're about 1,500 miles to the east of there.
Right. Alice Springs is like in the middle of nowhere next to that
Rock,
CIA.
Yeah. Uru, they call it now.
What do they call that place? I've forgotten. CIA.
Uru.
Huh?
That big rock is called, or near Alice Springs.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is thanks, Mark, again, and you've been listening. I've been talking to Mark Heinrich from Canberra, Australia. This is Craig Canada. The show is Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And by the way, if you Free Radio needs money, just like everybody else, and they have a donate button on their website, so. If you have money you want to donate, then go there and push the donate button, and the website is freakradio.org. And with that, I believe that will be a wrap.
Tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and focus on the close up, Mr. Wills, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get bush rat news. That's in your neighborhood, it's under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away.